Hi, and welcome back. My name is Jack Register, and I'm your host for Finding the Zen Within, an anger management podcast for men. Today, we're going to talk about the connection between anger management issues and unresolved grief. Again, our podcast is not therapy. Our podcast is meant to be informational. So if you're struggling out there and you need some support, there are places that you can go, like Therapy Den, Psychology Today, and Open Path, to find folks who can actually help navigate this for you. As always, if you're struggling with feelings like you don't want to be here anymore, or feelings like you might want to hurt yourself or someone else, please reach out to the National Suicide Hotline at 988. If you're not based in the U.S., we're going to start posting some resources because we're excited to say that we now have six different countries of folks who are listening to our podcast. So I'll be posting some in the show notes and on the website that'll be going up soon specifically for the podcast of other resources that are available. Thank you for joining us. When we talk about the idea of unresolved grief, what we're really looking at are those big and small losses that we all experience in life that directly affect how we see ourselves in the world and how we show up. Sometimes when we're unable to put to rest something that's been going on in our world, we can get to a point where it just sort of hangs over us like a cloud. And it's really important that men understand this. Because oftentimes, this sort of layering effect of expectations from grief or of the losses that we've experienced can weigh us down. And we can feel as though that we're trying to just drag through the world with this huge weight behind us. And it might be the expectations of folks long gone, where we didn't think that we measured up to what they needed us to be. Or for many men who have law enforcement and military experience, it might be directly related to your job. For those of us in healthcare and human services and education, it could be issues around the vicarious trauma by being present to the people that we're working with every day, and in some cases, really seeing some of the hard things that folks have to go through. So we really want to talk about the ways in which different kinds of unresolved grief or different kinds of things that can happen to us related to grief can directly contribute to people's issues around anger management. This idea of emotional suppression. Many men believe in the idea because culturally we're trained in the West that you must be stoic, that anger is really the only appropriate emotion we're allowed to show, and that it's really tough for many men to even consider the idea that what I've got going on is so big that I'm not going to be able to take care of myself and I'm not going to be able to show up in the way that I'm supposed to if I show a sign of weakness. These cultural messages that we have to swallow these feelings, no matter how big or how hard they are actually really toxic and can create a very difficult experience for men because we end up getting to a point where all of our emotions are walled off. And then they only show up in extremes. Emotional suppression leads to all kinds of issues around blood pressure and biological traits and other emotional kinds of situations where you just explode. And so in essence, no one really gets to experience you as you want to be. They only experience you in the extremes. Increased irritability, I kind of call this the sandpaper effect. When you carry around a lot of unresolved expectations, a lot of unresolved feelings about grief or about situations that have happened to you where you had a loss, because anything that a loss comes from can be considered grief. This sort of sandpaper irritation leads us to explosive anger, leads us to not being able to express what we're trying to say. And the hard part is, anger is actually a part of the grieving process. It's actually a stage in the grieving process. And we have to be really clear with ourselves that that is a part of the process, that to be upset with how someone may not be here anymore or a job loss or a house lost or a divorce or whatever it happens to be. But the difficulty is that we can get to a space where this increased irritability gets so out of control that we are unable to contain ourselves in situations that ordinarily would be fine. We then look at issues around depression and anxiety. These are mood disorder sort of situations that are very common. Now, we're not talking about the really seriously clinical issues around depression and anxiety. What we're talking about are the everyday stressors that everyone goes through. Everyone is going to experience some level of depression and anxiety in life. it does not necessarily mean it's clinically significant to a point where they need a diagnosis and medication and so on. The issue is that when you live with depression and anxiety for a really long time, then it becomes clinically significant. And this contributes to anger management, because then your emotions are tinted with these lenses that everything in the world feels really heavy, or everything in the world is so energetic and anxious and out of control that nothing's ever going to be okay again. It's like just trying to breathe and just trying to exist doesn't happen. And that's really terrifying for many, many men. And the hard part is that the more depression and anxiety is present, the more anger that's going to be present. The more anger that's going to be present, the shorter the fuse is going to be. And it becomes a perfect storm situation where a man is living in the middle of a maze, begging for people to see him and find him and help him, but he can't get out. And then we have a grief. We have a loss, in essence, that no one can see the pain that I'm in, which must mean that no one knows me, no one loves me, no one wants me, which then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. My friends, self-fulfilling prophecies are things that we say to ourselves on a regular basis. These are very dangerous. I know this very well in my own experience of healing. I had a self-fulfilling prophecy for years that I was unwanted, unloved, and unable to be the man that my parents and my family wanted. And I spent many years close to suicide because I couldn't be who everybody else wanted me to be. And it took everything that I had to come back from the brink. Addiction, substance use, process disorders, and so on, the coping skills that we all have, right? This is not the 5 o'clock drink that we might have with friends. This is the suitcase of beer. This is the 12 shots that we have to have. This is the 2.5 packs a day of cigarettes. This is the gambling. This is all the extreme uses of substance and process behaviors that we use to just try and blow off steam. But in reality, we go neutral. The thing I always say to clients over the years is that the very first thing that happens when someone takes a drink, takes a smoke, takes a snort, or wins at cards is they actually breathe, which is all we really want to do at the end of the day when we're stressed, is just breathe. This notion of isolation, men isolate in general when we don't know what else to do. The common behavior, I have to be the lone wolf, I have to go off on my own, I have to figure out how to fight the world, as it were. This lone wolf mentality means that my reality, whatever it is I'm experiencing, never gets challenged externally. I don't have folks to say, hey, what you're going through is normal. What you're going through is not your fault. I don't have people to pull me back whenever things seem really out of control. And it's important for us to have people to do that. In counseling, we call this reality testing. Without reality testing, we're going to get caught up in the story we make up about social reality. And because I can only see reality through my own lens of my own experience, I can't then see what someone else sees, because everything that makes me who I am becomes the lens in which I experience the world. The hard part of this is, for many of us, is that we are conditioned to believe that what we're experiencing is wrong, is incorrect, is not appropriate for the moment at hand. And so we have to back up a minute and say, what I'm experiencing is true for me. What I'm making up about that, or what I believe about that, might be directly related to something else. Might be related to old pain, might be related to what I tell myself about the situation, or what others have told me about their perceptions of the situation. This is the hard thing. So, for example, when I was a young person, my parents used to tell me all the time that I needed to man up, that I need to show up differently than I did. For years, I didn't understand what that meant. I didn't understand what it meant to man up. It meant, from their point of view, that I needed to have thicker skin. I needed to not react. I needed to be able to swallow my feelings in the moment. I needed to be stronger. I needed to be more stoic. Well, none of those things are really connected to the man that I know myself to be. And it took a very long time and a lot of work to let go of this idea that my father, my uncles, my grandfather's versions of being a man are not what my versions are, and that that's completely okay. And that even my mother, grandmother, and aunties, who were wonderful, kind, amazing humans, had a version of me that is not who I am. And that's okay too. I can be the man that I know myself to be, that I have crafted throughout my life, that I have been guided to by my spiritual path, so that I can become everything I'm meant to be. And to do that, I have to let go of the expectations. My friends, this is one of the fundamental ways that we break these cycles, is that we get out of our head and get unstuck. And that's what's really important. And so isolation, while it being the number one way that we take care of ourselves, let me pull away and think, actually creates more chaos. It's okay to pull away for a moment, but then find people to check in with. Create your inner circle. I call it my Jedi Council from Star Wars. I go to those people I most trust and say, this is what I'm experiencing. This is what I'm feeling. How does this fit with how you know me to be and how you know I want to be? And then I trust and take in that input and then figure out what to do. There's a lot of folks on the internet who will say, trust no one, tell no one anything. Human beings are not made to be lone wolves, period. Men are not made to be lone wolves, period. We are not at war with the world, period, unless we want to be. As hard as it is to live in today's world, being connected in a real, genuine, and comprehensive way of creating community is how we're going to solve problems, not through more isolation and distrust. So, what we have to do around this notion of grief is to embrace it. Grief walks with us as a reminder of how short our life really is, and that our entire life as we know it can change in an instant. And if we aren't careful, we are going to continue to think that our life is going to be the same way that it was before. And that's really difficult. We have to give ourselves permission to grow beyond where we have been. One of the ways in which this sort of broken thinking or messed up thinking, because human beings being broken is a really difficult statement, because I don't really believe that everybody is broken. I believe that we get into a spot where we fall into a hole, but it doesn't mean that we're broken, is that we create what's called cognitive dissonance. And cognitive dissonance are basically when we've got two different ideas that are both true, but are in opposition to each other. So I might be struggling with the loss of a job because I got fired after 30 years, right? And figuring out who am I going to be now? How am I going to be in the world? How am I going to take care of those important to me? And I might also be someone who holds all of these degrees and certifications and should be able to make whatever money I need to make. It's really difficult when suddenly the identity that we've created is no longer usable. I've had this experience before where I had to stop and go, well, the Jack that I know, who can go out in the world and do things, is not the Jack in front of me. But the Jack in front of me is still a whole and complete person who is struggling to figure out what's happened. So, to embrace our grief, we first have to go into the muck. We have to feel our feelings, as the only way around is through. Grief lasts as long as it needs to. There are tons of support so that we don't have to do that alone. But as we slowly work our way through, grief slowly starts to subside, and we can make the meaning out of why did this loss happen? What do I need to grow from? How do I change myself because of this experience? And how can I create a new version of me? It's important, my friends, to honor where we are so that we don't get stuck where we've been. If you want to know more about what we're up to, please visit my website, jack-register.com. Look for Finding the Zen Within. We offer one-on-one and group coaching. We offer a lot of interesting information. And if you're interested in being a part of the podcast, we have a form on that site where you can download and just do a quick survey for us and tell us a little bit about what you're looking for, and then we can get you scheduled for being a guest on the podcast. I truly appreciate your time and attention today, and thank you so much for being here. Be well.